This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And the Anne Hathaway essence has begun.
Yeah. Again. Every time she's in a movie, it's like...
she's back.
A renaissance.
But this, I do think that this is a big...
it's a wild year for her, yeah.
She has five movies coming out. She has Mother Mary, which we were discussing in this week's episode. We have The Devil Wears Prada 2. We have The Odyssey. We have The End of Oak Street, the random dinosaur movie that she's in for some reason.
Can't wait.
Then, of course, we have Verity, the... the...
terrible. The child abuse fantasy from the mind of Colleen Hoover.
And then there's also a movie called Alone at Dawn that stars her and Adam Driver that Ron Howard directed. Is done filming. It wrapped in February. So that...
yikes.
That could be a sort of like fall festival release that would also come out this year, theoretically.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild.
We shall see. But she could have six movies this year. I feel like I'm looking at her IMDb, and I don't think she's ever had this many movies in a single year. And the last time that I feel like we were really like, oh, this is the return of Anne Hathaway, was when Ocean's 8 came out back in 2018. Yeah. And then she immediately followed that up with Serenity, one of our favorites.
Your favorite.
The Hustle with her and Rebel Wilson.
Terrible.
And then the last thing he wanted, the Netflix movie based on the Joan Didion novel, which might be the worst movie she's ever been in. So, and then The Witches.
And The Witches.
And The Witches, which was, what was
and
that?
And Mother's Instinct.
Well, Mother's Instinct didn't come for several years later. That was in 2014.
She's been in more misses than hits.
She's had an okay run recently, but it's just a bunch of movies that nobody saw. Like, she was good in Armageddon Time. She was good in Eileen. She was good in She Came to Me, where she plays a woman who becomes a nun. But nobody saw
literally, what are you talking about? I haven't heard any of these movies.
Exactly. Those three, like, they were festival movies that nobody saw. Eileen, she plays like a sexy therapist who works at a prison. It's really good. Eileen is great. More people should go see Eileen.
She Came to Me is with Peter Dinklage.
Yes, and Marissa Tomei plays a tugboat captain.
Right,
and Anne Hathaway plays a nun.
Underrepresented career. Yeah.
So how could you not be into that?
Right.
And then there was Mother's Instinct with her and what is her name? Jessica Chastain.
Yeah. Yeah.
That didn't even get released. Yeah. But most recently, she was in The Idea of You, which...
right.
Good. Good movie.
I could be your mother, but you're not.
Where she plays Selene, the art dealer. Never forget, Selene.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, I think... I know you're a big fan. You're a big Annie lover. I do not identify as anything negative nor positive. I remain neutral. On the Anne Hathaway front. So this year, you know, she's kind of a irksome personality. Like, I was anti and the Hathaway hater movement. I believe we did an episode on it, maybe. I thought it was insane the way we turned on her. It was so unbased. I did not enjoy that. That being said, I do believe that people can just not like certain people because the vibes just aren't meshing. And for me, her press tours do not bring me joy personally.
Well, she has a lot of theater kid energy. And so sometimes she is just like a little too on in her interviews. Inshallah. She's just a little too performative, inshallah. And And did you see that somebody gave her a copy of the Quran? Like, since then, like, some fan gave her a copy of the Quran.
Yeah.
You know, I love her.
I've seen both takes on she had no business saying that, and some people be like, yeah, let's normalize it. It's just another way of saying, like, God willing, like, whatever. It's inclusive. I don't know. I don't care how it went about, but the way she said it so randomly was honestly like, I want to quote that, but I don't think I can without it seeing like the same problem, you know?
I think if you just say inshallah randomly in the middle of whatever else you're talking about currently, people would get the joke. I don't know if in 6 months people will get the reference. I don't know
how long it'll last. Yeah. But I have to milk it. This whole episode.
It is giving the Rachel Sennett Fatima meme a bit.
Yeah, no. So anyways, Anne Hathaway. She has a lot of personality.
More press from her. She's doing a lot of press, and she's not about close to being done.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. But can't you wait saw this before to me.
Talk about. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw this in the same room with Anne Hathaway.
Oh, yeah, the energy. Mm-hmm. But even with that essence, you walked away not a fan. I believe you gave this an F in vibes in your Substack.
Yes, I think I did. It's not really, I don't think this is Anne Hathaway's fault. I think that she's doing what she needs to be doing in this movie, given the script and everything. Like, I don't put any of the blame really on her.
Of course not.
As I sort of don't really ever, because I think that she's an actor who is giving 110%
in the job.
Any
yeah.
project that she is given.
Yeah.
She takes some weird roles, which I think she likes. She likes pushing the boundaries. And sometimes those movies aren't quite like fully baked, I think,
right?
But she seems to be enjoying them, and she's committed to them in the same way that she's committed to really good movies that she's in. There doesn't it's not like she's phoning it in for some performances and really trying for others. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I think she's mm-hmm. trying her best, no matter if she's in The Witches or if she's in Mother Mary. However, sometimes those movies are not great. Yeah. And I think we kind of knew that this was not going to be a good movie, just based on the rollout of this. This film was first announced in March of 2023. Mm-hmm. And they began filming it in May of 2023. Now, granted, there was strikes that were involved in here, so that slowed it down a little bit. But filming had wrapped by July 2024. So we have had a full almost 2 years since this movie finished filming to it coming out. And having watched it now, it's not like there's a lot of, visual effects or things that they had to really like work in here. I think it was truly just that the script was not great, and so they were trying to like fix it in post, and it never really was fixable. Because
can I just say,
okay, yes, you loved it.
I actually did enjoy this movie. I think it's weird. I think the ending is pretty convoluted and kind of like fizzles hard. You know,
yes.
The last 4 minutes kind of like, it hurt. Because mm-hmm. I was pretty on board through the journey, through the weirdness. Like and I don't know if it helped that I had zero expectations. Like, I honestly was not looking forward to this because the reviews were bad and because you were like, it was boring. Uh-huh. So I think I was pleasantly surprised by how quickly I was engaged with it. And I think I also saw what the director was trying to do, because it's,
It's David Lowry.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's done a lot of like these sort of like weird surrealist.
A ghost story, The Green Knight. Yes. Yeah.
And so I was like, and then on top of that, you have the whole like pop star of it all. And I, as a recovering Swiftie, am like very enmeshed in that world. And he Well, they've said since promoting the film, like, there was no one in particular. He's also said throughout the production of this that he was inspired by the Reputation tour movie. Yes. And a lot of it was about, like, Taylor Swift and the performance aspect. And then, of course, knowing that, having the lens of, like, well, Taylor Swift's breakup with her muses, including Karlie Kloss and sort of that relationship. So that also elevated the film for me. It felt like almost a sequel to The Moment with Charlie XCX, where it was like a double feature where it's like, oh, this is like 10 years after the breakup with her creative director in that movie, and then what it would be like to come back to that. There was just like a similar vibe there. And I love the artist versus the inspo and like who owns it. And when you become a product, like where does yourself go? All of that was working for me.
Yeah.
I think that there,
well, I think that when you describe it, like a lot of that works sort of on paper. I don't know that it worked for me in the movie. I guess to talk about the film and the synopsis. This was billed as like lesbians who have like Anne Hathaway.
Isn't the tagline literally, this is not a love story?
Well, the early log line, like when this was announced, like however long ago, it was Anne Hathaway is a pop star, Michaela Cole is a fashion fashion designer, and that they are in this like weird like psychosexual lesbian like love affair kind of a thing. Like we didn't really know very much about the plot. Yeah. In the movie, Anne Hathaway plays Mother Mary, a pop star who is having a mental breakdown and shows up on the doorstep of Michaela Cole, who is a famous fashion designer working at like a fancy barn outpost in the middle of nowhere, and is like, I need a dress from you in a couple of days. You're the only one who can make it. Like, I'm having a breakdown. We used to be really good friends 10 years ago. Like, now I need you to make this dress. And Michaela Cole is like, well, you screwed me over 10 years ago and sort of like left me for dead. And then I became this fashion designer on my own. Like, why should I make a dress for you? And so a lot of the movie is talky. And
I loved it.
And they're in this barn. And Michaela Cole has this, like, high, almost Shakespearean poetic language that she's talking in.
It's very theatrical.
And Anne Hathaway is, like, depressed and woebegone and beleaguered and crying. There's a scene where she's, like, throwing herself around the floor in this dance that she claims is choreography for the two of them. It's definitely not.
Yes. You're describing all the best pieces, but I can feel your...
Well, it's I think one, if you're like, if Anne Hathaway is going to make a pop star movie, she's only going to make one pop star movie. And I want that pop star movie to be more pop star and less depressed.
But what would
that
look like? Like, what would that look like? You know, like what did you want?
Even like something like Vox Lux has more sort of... Like,
but that's what this was. Like, that's where I was surprised, because I feel like there is like, if you count it up, there's only like 10 minutes of musical performance. Yes. But like anymore, it would have been a different kind of
movie. I guess how like The Moment, so much of it is like them on tour and them going around and them doing this and practicing or whatever. And it feels very like this is the life of a pop star. Like we are watching a pop star do pop star things. And this was like, oh, we've taken this woman and now they're just sort of like rehashing or hashing out their past disagreements in this barn.
It's very cerebral. Yeah.
Right. And it's like, this could have been about like a painter and a poet, you know, like it really could have been about any medium. It didn't have to be a pop star. And so I think
but that like, is our medium now, you know?
Right. So I think the expectations that I had were like maybe too high for this going in, but then also I felt like if you're going to give me a movie that is the like Taylor Swift, Karlie Kloss, like reuniting, rehashing out their past, I wanted to know more about who they were, how they met, because we never really know like were they romantically involved? Right. Or were they just friends?
This is not a love story.
Were they collaborators? How did they meet? Sort of what was the issue
that
made them falling out? Like, I just wanted to know more about these people. Yeah. And the whole thing felt a lot more like metaphorical and almost like these are two symbols of people than these are two characters. And I think I wanted them to feel more humane, even if the back end of this story does go into this like ghostly seance thing where it's like, okay, this is like otherworldly and it is more about symbols. I just wanted the whole thing felt more like a parable or a prophetic exercise than it did a story about an actual person. And I didn't like that.
I can see what you mean.
But a lot of people did, so... I mean, not me, but others, you know, there are people who agree with you who thought this was really good.
Yeah. No, I the discourse is rich. There's lovers and haters. It's very divisive. And I think it totally comes down to like style, because this was like intentionally very stage production-y. Like it is very one set. All of her, like, I really liked how the music, how the like flashbacks to her performances were set up like a stage. So we were always like backstage.
The one with the
her.
Stairs is incredible. Yeah. That's the best so scene good. Of the movie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like all of it really worked from a stylistic perspective for me. Like it honestly gave me vibes of Women Talking, which I think is another one you didn't necessarily love.
I hated that movie as well. But that is a good comparison because I dislike those movies for the same reason.
Yeah. And I was like on board. I mean, maybe it's like, it's interesting too because you like theater. It's not like you're anti a play.
No, I love theater.
Yeah. But I felt like you get more character from this sort of in the moment kind of talky without all the backstory. Like you don't need the like montage of them and like how they met and like their first Coachella together or whatever. Like I was like, I think I like having the like relationship dangled in front of me and not fully knowing it. And so you can kind of like play with like your interpretation of it. It's a little more open-ended. And honestly, sometimes those female friendships are so like entangled and complex and weird, and you don't know who's at fault, but you know you miss them, but you know you love them, but you know you hate them. And so all of that was like really fascinating to watch play out in this sort of high stakes way.
If this was a play though, I think that we would have like hinted at the why the friendship broke up,
and but they didn't hint at it.
No. But then the final act would have been like the reveal. You know how like in the Death of a Salesman or whatever, you know, it's like you get to the end and you're like, well, no, because you had an affair and my mom had an abortion or whatever. Like you get to that like moment of catharsis where you figure out like why all of the action has happened. But that never came in this.
Yeah. It's just messy. It's like, that's life. It's like, and I think that's why it was interesting to have the designer be the like narrator at the beginning. Like she's like, I can feel it. This like toxic cloud. But then it turns out like Anne Hathaway's character is carrying like a literal physical manifestation of that same awareness and trauma bonding. So I don't know. I was like really engaged in it. And I think too, the director was talking about how he was writing this movie while shooting Green Knight, but getting Disney execs' feedbacks on his Peter and Wendy movie and like how he had to like strip down so much of what he wanted to like appease this like public idea of what was needed. And so you just kind of like see that frustration of like art and creativity and inspiration and packaging, like happening in this sort of like dance between these two who believe themselves to be morally superior or like in the right. But I found the like perspective of both to be valid, where the designer was like, you were in this magazine quoted saying, like, I just wanted to be Joan of Arc, but I was the one who wanted you to be Joan of Arc. And I gave you this dress with the red beading because it reminded me of when I was a kid and I spilled wine down my communion dress, but you took that for yourself. And she's like, well, yeah, but I am Mother Mary. Like, that is, you created that for me. Like, that is mine now because I performed in it. And I don't know, like, that's such an interesting, like, specific kernel of a fight that it just feels like, yeah, that's probably happening all the time. Like, is Zendaya Zendaya because she's Zendaya, or is she Zendaya because La Roche like makes her style so talkative? And and like, if they ever break up, like, how will that look? What will that impact and all that sort of stuff? So yeah. And then the movie takes a turn where it does become this surprise ghost story.
Yes. Where I'm like trying to even remember all of the details of this. So they break up.
Yeah. She's like iced out. The designer's iced out of the Mother Mary machine, that she's no longer needed. They just take her designs and leave her in the dust, which she resents.
And she goes and sees Anne Hathaway. She goes and sees Mother Mary in a concert, but like, it's just in the audience. But then I'm trying to remember,
she's so furious. She clenches her jaw and her tooth ruptures.
Yes, and her tooth cracks. Yeah. And does the thread come out of her mouth?
Well, it's like, so she gets a tooth removed and then wakes up in the middle of the night, and there's a ghostly apparition of like red fabric.
Right.
That seems to have come from the bloody trail from her mouth wound.
Right. Sort of.
And then she kind of tells it to leave.
Yes.
She's like, you have no place here. And she exercises this obsession.
And it travels across the water. And it
travels for 4 years across the water to where FKA Twigs just happens to be doing a seance with Mother Mary.
Yes, of course. And Anne Hathaway cuts her hand?
No, FKA Twigs, while possessed by this apparition, slices her hand with the crucifix necklace. And and then Mother Mary, in recovering from this, is haunted by the red fabric that then enters the wound.
Yes, and the stigmata, if you will.
And and conjoins with Anne Hathaway's soul.
Right.
And so then she has her breakdown.
Right. And at what point does she fall off the scaffolding?
Right after. So as the fabric enters her, she feels like she's lost herself. She doesn't know where she begins and where it begins and she ends. And she feels like she just goes. And that's where you have the sequence of her doing her performances and feeling just drained and tapped out. And everyone's just pushing her up to keep going. And then it's as she's like in this final concert moment that she sees the ghost again and takes a step back, but it looks like she, since no one else can see it, it looks like she jumps from this platform during her big show.
Yes. But and then she basically hangs herself from the floating platform during the show.
Yeah.
And that's part of the issue. So then when she goes to Michaela Cole, they have a separate seance where after they've sort of like reconciled, that Anne Hathaway like cuts open her chest in an apology.
Disgusting.
And the red thread comes back out again as like a symbol of like hatred and
love.
Yes. And sort of
and cooperation. Vengeance
and whatever. Yeah. And then the fabric is then this giant red vagina dress that Michaela Cole is making, but that Anne Hathaway doesn't wear.
Right. She doesn't end up making it in time. Well, the whole like final soliloquy is stated by the designer's like assistant. She's like, can you imagine it? Can you picture it? And then she like gives a spiel about Anne Hathaway's character going up for her new, like her comeback performance. And she's not wearing the dress they're making. She's wearing the one her team wanted her, but she strips it down, seems to be close to having another breakdown. But then she sings the greatest song in the history of songs. which we don't get to hear.
And we also don't hear the song. Yeah, and because she's talking the whole time about how she wants to play this song, yes. Spooky Action,
yes.
For Michaela Cole that she's yeah. written for her. But we never hear
it.
The song. We just hear the other songs.
Total
I mean,
edgy.
I do think it is... It is hard to the entire movie to be like, oh, and this is the greatest song yeah, I've ever yeah. written, and oh, this
It'll
is the best song.
Be let down.
Then you get to that song, and it's like, eh, okay, this isn't that good. But at the same time, it feels like such a cop out yeah. to then not play us the song.
Right.
When
yeah.
like Diane Warren could have written you a great song for Anne Hathaway to perform at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I think that was part of it, is sort of the like, well, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's like, okay, she might be continue to be great. She might not. But at least in this moment, she feels like herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the metaphor struggles under the finale. I think that's where I was like, oh, man, I wish it had been like a tighter finish. Whether that meant like playing the song or not, like that's, you know, neither here nor there, but having this like final soliloquy and having them like split and having the dress, like, I don't know, it just kind of like got too jumbled. I feel like it should have ended with like the I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry line, and then they just go about their business. Like, don't show me the dress, don't show me the song, don't talk about her performance. Like, let it just be this like cleansing chapter in their lives. But
it feels, yeah. It feels like to me that this, that David Lowery had a lot of interesting ideas that he wanted to yeah. play with in this movie, and that maybe he just should have taken longer in the script writing phase, because it kind of feels like he shot the movie, and then the part of the reason why it's been 2 years is that he was then trying to sort of like fix the ending or figure out how to make the movie work in post, which is always harder, and that's why it's taken so long. And I think that probably part of that is the ending, and why the ending is so like kind of wonky. I just wish that people spent more time working on these scripts, because I feel like we make this complaint over and over and over again about these movies where it's like, oh, the movie has a good premise, but it doesn't quite figure out how to end itself. And like, maybe the screenwriter just needed another 6 months or needed some help to figure out how to end the movie before we actually shoot the movie, rather than go, ah, we'll figure it out on set as we go along.
But I do think, like, I think this didn't feel like a script problem to me. I think it's like fun to have these movies where it's kind of like, well, what does it mean? And I think this movie is doing that. I think he knows what he wants it to mean. And I just think it's, like, interesting to sit with. Like, it's watching, like, some, like, that Sandra Bullock Lost Book movie.
Okay.
Where you're like, wow, this script sucks. Like, this is clearly a terrible story.
No, I mean, this
feels, this, like, literary, right?
There's a lot of artistry here. It just doesn't quite all connect. And I like a movie that sort of ends in an ambivalent note, and there's a lot of different ways to interpret stuff. Like, I really do sort of like a wonky, weird movie in that way.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like the beginning is too sort of put together, where it's like, so it's like, it's all this precise language, and it's like one setting, and it's really kind of like strict in what it's doing, and then it kind of rambles off in the second half. Like if going back to The Green Knight, his last movie, I believe, which I really did like mm-hmm. that's this myth, and the whole thing is really weird, and it kind of follows the book but not really, and there's all of these like strange visions and things happening, and I love that movie because I think there's so much like going on, and there's so many different ways to interpret what is happening, but that is through the entire movie. Like, it all feels like of one piece, and like he had a vision for what he wanted to do, and that it's executed from start to finish, where this almost feels like two separate movies, where the first half is this like stage play in the barn, and then the second half you get to the like supernatural elements that then kind of don't I don't know, I feel like don't really connect super well. Yeah. I will say, I loved the music in this. Charlie XCX and, is it Jack Antonoff? Yeah, Charlie XCX, yeah. Jack Antonoff, and FKA Twigs all worked on the songs. And we don't really hear like full songs. It's just kind of snippets at places. But it's really good. Oh, I really like it. Yeah. I've been listening to it a lot.
So I'm just are like, I wanted more Mother Mary. Make it fun. Right. Yes. Give me Mother Mary.
Is the gay, that is the gay in me. Saga, it's like, if we're going to have a pop star movie, I want the pop star doing pop star things, and I want lots of songs. Like, I think there's 7 songs, and I'm like, we could have had more. Like,
I did
A Star Is Born, you know?
Like, it was like, he really nailed the, like, pop star aesthetic. Like, yeah, you could argue this is more Gaga, more Beyonce, but there's a lot of like the Taylor Swift of it. And so I was just like fascinated watching it. And I think also what was one of my favorite parts was when Anne Hathaway's trying to think of what she wants the dress to be, and all she can do is kind of gesture wildly with her hands. Like, she does not have words. And then Miss Cole becomes like the interpreter, and she's like able to pull the words out of her, which is an ironic twist on how this is the pop star. She's supposed to be the communicator. She's supposed to be, she is the one who's connecting all these fans with words, but she actually doesn't have them herself. And, you know, that's the like question of all these like pop girlies of, and it's asked explicitly in this film when FKA Twigs is like, well, where do you put all that? Like, what, you take so much, like, what does it cost you? And again, she's just kind of this stumbling, bumbling pop star who doesn't have the language to like say what she wants or needs. And even at her worst is struggling to communicate with her would-be artistic partner. And I thought Anne Hathaway did really well with that, like being able to perform as the star believably in these big set pieces, but then off stage be kind of this like empty vessel of kind of a pathetic sort of figure who's being paraded around as needed.
I mean, I think you see that a lot with pop stars.
Yeah.
You know, like Britney Spears or Taylor Swift, these Michael Jackson even to a certain degree. Like fans think of them in a certain way because of their songs and their music videos and their stage performance, but that is so different from who they are on a daily basis. And also all of those things are the product of so many people working together. And a lot of time the vision, while they have the talent and sort of the charisma, the larger vision is either one other person's, a group of other people's, you know, I think even with like Charlie XCX, this like the brat era, while was partially her idea, like it was partially, you know, this the idea of like her creative sort of director person who came on during Crash, and then they were like thinking of, okay, how do we like do a new era? What does that look like? What does the color, you know, like. It's not a one-man show. It's a group effort.
Yeah.
But fans don't necessarily see that. They think it's all you, and then they expect certain things from you when actually you're a kind of different vibe in the background.
Yeah.
And I almost sort of wonder, now that I'm thinking about that, if that is a little bit of the issue that's going on with Taylor Swift and her, like, style and such, that she was so annoyed for the first part of her career of people trying to split up the credit and give the credit for her to other people, that now she's like consolidated in such a way that she's like, no, I will be doing all of this.
Yes.
And so now it's like she doesn't really have a vibe as far as styling goes. And also like with Life of a Showgirl, like that concept doesn't really work in the way that I think it needs to. But I think that's because it's her. And it's like, I think at a certain point, especially when you are so in the world that you're in, you need someone who has like a little bit more perspective and sort of a further out vantage point to come in and be like, okay, like this is what you're good at, but we're going to like tweak these things and change these things and like make it something that all feels cohesive and fits together and is more of a brand. And because she's the one doing all of that, that's why it doesn't quite stick. She's like, I'll put my bread in the music video. And it's like, okay, that's not like, that like La Roche is never agreeing to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. And I think it's interesting to have it be like a pop singer and her costumer rather than like a co-writer or something where a split would feel more nefarious and backstabby. Uh-huh. But in this, you can see that to Anne Hathaway's character's mind, it's like, well, there is no Mother Mary without me, but there could be a different costume designer. So like, why are you taking this so personally? And yet she's like, no, the costumes are the story. Like the persona right. is the projection of this like visual.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like it was like a good meaty film that allowed David Lowery to kind of explore artistic and inspiration and all that, but also feel like really present and in the moment. And I mean, yeah, like he was inspired basically watching my face, if you think about it.
Watching your face?
Mm-hmm. Because I'm like,
how so?
I'm like in the Reputation movie.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, of course. How could I possibly have forgotten? He saw that
one fan and was like, I want to explore
wow, that's a
psychological
great.
Phenomenon.
I'm
like, zoom in.
I also am very excited for the era where you sort of like come up with some shady deal to cut me out of the podcast.
I'm already working on it.
A situation like that. You're like, actually, but just
the sign this reunion really will be that much sweeter, you know, like the tension.
In 10 years, yes. Yeah. In 10 years, when you show up at my queen's doorstep sobbing.
I'm like,
you've got to cut your chest open, Shelby. Get the cloth out.
I feel like it's like it reminds me of like those English lit classes where you're talking about James Joyce or you're reading like a short story and you're like, this doesn't really work, but I'm going to read the hell into these lights he describes and why does he choose this light and what does it mean. And it's like, yeah, the argument could be made that you're giving too much credit, you're reading too much into it, but that's like the fun of art, I think. And that's why nice when there is something chewy like this where it feels intentionally muddied and you could argue he could do better, but I also think that we should allow movies like this to exist because they are kind of like thought-provoking and weird. And like, I didn't really like Vox Lux. I like something like this more. And I think there's just enough like reality that I can excuse some of the cerebral, you know, over the top visuals of a ghostly curtain haunting these two, two women.
I'll say this. I will take this movie 100 times over before like a Marvel corporate bullshit movie.
Well, then you shouldn't be giving it an effing vibes, Matt.
I'm sorry, but it does, like, there's different levels of effing vibes. You can give an effing vibes for different reasons. And it's also sort of like on a sliding scale of what's happening in the week. Yeah. If this had come out the same week as Captain America, whatever the Red Hulk one was last year, then that would have been the effing vibes.
Yeah.
This is an effing vibes because it's not living up with what I wanted.
You wanted something perkier.
I either wanted something perkier or something smarter. I think that this was just a little too messy and it felt underbaked for me. But I do like a movie that you can discuss whether or not, you know, it's good or not, that you can sort of parse through other people, be like, okay, what did this mean? What was the symbolism? And I also love a movie about the creative process.
Yeah.
Like, as someone who is a, you know, creative, I guess, I like thinking about that and thinking about that and that in a collaborative way and that in, you know, sort of a personal way, like writing I think is different in a lot of than a lot of other mediums, because it is a really like individualistic thing for the most part, at least in like what I do and you do. We're not like writers on a TV show or something where you're having to make a lot of edits. It's like mostly I write stuff. Sometimes I have an editor, sometimes I don't. But, you know, I think we've been a part of obviously things that are creative that have multiple people in them. And when you think about people who are working and like doing a play or whatever, it's always fascinating to watch how those creative visions clash and intersect.
Well, and it's like, you know, I don't think this movie is doing great. Like you said, it was a slow rollout, which means word of mouth didn't do it any favors, which I think is unfair because I do think this is an interesting movie and an entertaining one. And some of the set pieces were really good. And I liked the talkiness of it and the theatricality, and both of the women were doing great. But also, good news for David Lowery is no one's picking up on the Taylor Swift of it all mainstream wise, because there are some... I know too much about Taylor Swift. But there were some like interesting references. Okay.
Oh, do tell.
Maybe a stretch, but there's like a line in this where I was like, wait, I feel like that's a Taylor Swift lyric. And it was where they were talking about like I was your secret twin. Or like, you were my secret twin. And that's like how Taylor Swift refers to Karlie Kloss. Like in, she's like, not a twin from my dreams, but a crook who got caught or something. Which is obviously a stretch, but I do think it was like, it was just fun enough for me to imagine like someone being as obsessed or aware of this sort of like, is it a romance? Is it a muse? Is it a best friend? And focused enough on that moment in pop culture history that that was like percolating in their head, that they're like, I've got to put this on paper. Like, I can relate to that, you know? And I delight in the idea of him being like, what is that? And like allowing space for that sort of female friendship and maybe romantic relationship to play out in such a toxic and engaging way.
The Taylor Swift Karlie Kloss friendship breakup is so fascinating. I mean, yes, there's the lesbian element to it, but whatever. Just we so rarely get a famous, like, well documented friendship breakup. Like, there's obviously like collaborators or business partners or wherever where something goes bad in that way, and then obviously romantic breakups, but I think friendships are highly under documented in media. And if you have ever been through a friendship breakup, they are eviscerating in a way that other relationships aren't, because the thing about a friendship breakup is that like there's no real reason why it needs to happen. Like, you can have a lot of friends, you can have friends for a long time. It's not like a romantic breakup where it's like, you know, for most people you only are dating or partnered with one person at a time. So if you decide that option's not good, you have to end it in order to pick a new one. With friends, you can be friends with 100 people. Like, sometimes friendships, you know, sort of like come and go or they wane. But like, if you're really good with friends with somebody, you can be friends with them for your whole life. So to have someone who you are good friends with and have a conscious falling out where then you are no longer friends, where one of the two of you was like, I could be friends with you, but I don't want to be, is just devastating in a way. Because it's like, wait, why are we doing this? Like, we don't have to do this unless something like truly nasty.
And the scars are like raw forever. It's like, if you bring up a boy I dated or had a crush on, like, whatever. But if you bring up a friend I used to have and it's like, oh, you're right back there. And you're like, how did that happen? What did I do wrong? I like have stress dreams about friend breakups, or like running into an old friend that we had a bad falling out. And it's like, and so watching this, I was like, I was dialed in, you know, I was like, oh, yes, like you love them, you hate them in equal measure, and then you realize they're not worth either of those things. But also, like, if they knock on your door, would you let them in? Probably want to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
So I liked one that it was like psychosexually charged, but also never mm-hmm. explicitly sad. But I like too that that's like female friendship in a lot of ways, or any friendship where it's like you are someone's everything, and kind of like, oof, having to face that again and like really look at the scars left behind and having that physical manifestation of like tearing yourself open to release some of that tension. Like, yeah, I think it really worked for me.
It is also hard because with romantic relationships and romantic breakups, so many people have gone through them and they're so well documented in books and movies, and like you can have lots of conversations about that and sort of get past it. Where with friendship breakups, it's like it feels weird to bring it up to people who mm-hmm. don't know the situation. Mm-hmm. People who do know the situation are like, well, like, why are we talking about this anymore? Mm-hmm. Like, this is so you kind of are just stuck with it yourself, which I guess is sort of like a haunted red piece of fabric that is buried inside you. You're getting it now.
Yeah.
Right. You can't get it out. No, yeah. I almost like the second, like, I like that the illustration weirdness. Of the weird fabric thing, like that piece, I think really works. I like, if this had been more friendship breakup-y, like I would love a movie that was like Marriage Story, but with the friendship breakup, you know?
But you're not taking it. That's what this was. You're just like expecting and then projecting the lesbian on it.
Yeah, I guess I want. Yeah, I don't know. This is, maybe it's a me issue. as I avoid certain sections of Brooklyn to not run into people from my past.
You weren't ready for this piece of art, but one day.
Yes.
In about 10 years.
At some point, I'll call you sobbing on the floor, being like, I get it now. I get it.
The red fabric came for me. Yeah. No, it was interesting. Mm-mm-mm. I was expecting like her worst, but she's had so many worse films that I was like, actually, this might be one of her best. Yeah.
And she's good in this, I think. It's sort of like, it's not as big of a performance as you would think coming from her and a pop star, because she spends so much of it like as kind of like on the verge of tears.
Yeah.
But it is a really good performance. I do want to talk about the rollout for this movie though, because I think that they did a really bad job with that.
Well, yeah.
So they, obviously, Devil Wears Prada is coming out. There's all of this press for Anne Hathaway. And some of it's for Mother Mary, some of it's for Devil Wears Prada, but even like the Devil Wears Prada stuff, you know, it like filters in. You can do like her interviews and magazine covers or whatever. There's so much cross promotion. And I think the idea of like, okay, in one movie, Anne Hathaway's playing a pop star who is in some sort of relationship with a fashion designer. And the other one, she plays a journalist at a fashion magazine. Like, there's so many ways to promote it. And I think that if you just opened this movie wide on a weekend where there's not really anything else, which, you know, have been the last couple of weeks, that this would have gotten a lot of people who were like, oh, I want to go see Anne Hathaway play a pop star. Instead, they open it up in 5 theaters in New York and LA, where everybody who goes and sees it is like, wait, this was weird. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It was kind of a disappointment. Like, word gets around, and you might be like, you might want like it, you might not, whatever. Like, people who would normally go see, people who want to see Devil Wears Prada, who are like a little bit more basic in their movie taste, like, once word gets out that this is a weird movie, they're not going to go see it. But if you just opened it wide, I think people would go see it.
But then you have bad word of mouth. You don't want to like trick audiences into going to something.
But at that point, you already have the money, you know? Like this movie has made $2 million at the box office. $2 million off of a $20 million budget.
Yeah.
That is incredibly bad.
Yeah. But it's like, I agree.
It would have been
open wide. They should have had faith in their product, but marketed to the people who would like it. Like, I honestly didn't see anything about this. You were the one who told me about it through multiple like phases of it. Uh-huh. And so I feel like they should have found a way to market it, but not to the general audience. I don't think this needed that it ends with us sort of like, wear your florals. It's a pop star movie. But I don't
think it would have done that. But I think, like, for example, Marty Supreme is a weird movie, and that made way more money. Yeah. Not to say that this would make that much more money, but I think you could have marketed this to the, like, the audience that went and saw the drama.
Yeah.
And tried to do something more like that. And I don't think this movie would have ever made as much money as Marty Supreme or the drama, just because of the celebrities involved and whatnot. But I think that for something this small that people are like, eh, maybe I'll go see it, maybe I won't go see it, bad word of mouth is really a killer. And I think you only do this release strategy where you open it in 5 theaters and then more and then whatever, if you're like, oh, this is a surefire hit. Like, people are going to love this movie, but people just haven't heard of it. So if we open it in 5 theaters, people will go see it, they'll tell their friends. Next week, and we open it in 20 theaters, more people go see it because their friends have told them, they tell them, you know, and it's that. If it's something that's not good, then I'm like, just put it in the 1,000 theaters the first weekend, get as much money as you can, and then sort of whittle it down from there rather than the other way around.
Yeah, but there's definitely something missing because you had different expectations. I had no expectations. Right. And A24 is maybe counting on its label a little too much these days.
Also, I would like to talk about the fact that Hunter Schafer and Kaia Gerber and FKA Twigs and Jessica Brown Finley from Downton Abbey and Sean Clifford from Fleabag are all in this movie for approximately 12 seconds. Like,
that's just how it works.
I know, but it's so funny to me that, like, they got all of, like, you could have had Joe Schmo play these roles because it's like 2 lines, and instead we have Kaia Gerber.
They got Kaia Gerber. Yeah. Well, she should be in movies where she's only in it for 12 seconds. Please.
And she always is.
Yeah.
Kaia Gerber's been in 40 movies, and in all of them, she's had 3 lines.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is as it should be, if at all.
I'm like, actually, she's only been in 6 movies. I just happen to have seen all of them, even though they're not good.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then overcompensating. I forgot that she was in that, too, for 3 episodes.
But Hunter Schafer is good, and she got the last monologue, so.
Yeah, Hunter Schafer's great and everything. I need to watch this season of Euphoria. I know it's bad, but I'm going to watch it anyways.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is not the last that we'll be discussing Anne Hathaway. We will be back this next very week to discuss her again in the Devil Wears Prada 2. Any final thoughts on Mother Mary before we go? Inshallah.
No, inshallah.
Okay. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. Inshallah. Goodbye.